Chapter 5. Victor Borodini stood at the large bay window in the den of his estate, looking out over Cold Spring Harbor. The harbor was like a long finger of water extending into the north shore of Long Island. Bounded on the east by Huntington, with Lloyd Point to the northeast, and on the west by Sagamore Hill and Oyster Bay and Bayville to the north, the Borodini estate was located at the southernmost tip of the harbor, on a rise overlooking the water. The settlement known as the Borodini Enclave included the towns of Cold Spring Harbor, Huntington, Lloyd Harbor, Hale Site, Bayville, and Oyster Bay. At one time, it had been an exclusive residential area, Gatsby Country, home to millionaires. As the area became more populated, the upper middle class moved in and it became a wealthy Long Island suburb, though palatial mansions still dotted the North Shore. The harbor, once filled with sailboats bobbing on their moorings, was now mined, with no channel markers to indicate where death lurked just beneath the surface of the water. The crews manning the armed patrol boats had memorized the maps that marked the location of the mines, and when they came into the docks at the edge of the estate, they came in slowly, cruising with an uneasy caution, and scanning the water all around them in case of any of the mines drifted loose. A patrol boat and its entire crew had once been lost that way. Floodlights illuminated the harbor around the back of the estate, the light glinting off the rippling water. The gun emplacements at the foot of the sloping lawn stood like shadowy sentinels in the floodlit night. Borodini turned from the thick bulletproof glass and faced the men standing behind him. He was dressed in a black silk robe with gold trim and matching black silk pajamas. The letter B was embroidered in fancy gold script over his breast. He had soft black velvet slippers on his feet, and his jet black hair, graying at the temples, was immaculately combed and styled. His fingernails were manicured, and he wore a heavy gold signet ring on his right hand, a large diamond on his left. He opened the enamel box on his dark walnut desk, took out a cigarette, and lit it with a heavy gold desk lighter. Despite the lateness of the hour, the five men who stood facing him were all fully dressed in suits and ties. They were all silent, attentive, and uneasy. "How did it happen?" Borodini asked softly, his dark eyes boring into them. "According to a couple of the skulls who got away, it was an entire strike force assault team. Ice brought them to the warehouse. They just hit them all, from all sides."
"Did they?"
"Yes, sir." "Bring them in." The man who'd spoken nodded to a couple of the others and they left the room. A moment later, they came back in, escorting two young gang members with them.
"You know who I am?" said Borodini.
"Yes, sir, Mr. Borodini."
"And you know why you're here?"
They looked down at the floor. "We couldn't help it, Mr. Borodini. They had us outnumbered. There must have been 20, 30 of them. Hit us all at once. We fought them, but there was nothing we could do. There were too many of them."
20 or 30, Borodini said.
That's right, at least."
"And the ice was with them?"
"Yeah, brought them all right to the warehouse."
"So you were outnumbered and outgunned."
"Yeah, that's right. In an entire warehouse full of weapons." "They hit us from all sides, Mr. Borodini. There wasn't any time to do nothing."
"I want you to listen to something," Borodini said, staring at them. He reached for his desk and hit the play button on his answering machine.
"This is Ice,"
the deep voice said.
"And I got a message for Victor Borodini. Tell that motherfucker that me and my man Steel had ourselves a party last night. The two of us done made a bonfire at his warehouse. And his boys were so busy having themselves a gangbang, they never even saw us coming. Next time, maybe they keep their peckers in their pants and their eyes open. Won't help them none, though. You tell Borodini that contract you put out on me gonna cost him. We're only getting started. Have a nice day."
The tape stopped. "An entire strike force assault team," said Borodini. 20-30 men? At least? Isn't that what you said?" The two gang members avoided his gaze. Borodini turned toward the window. "Kill them."
"No, wait, Mr. Borodini, please!"
Two skulls were dragged out of the room.
"Tommy."
"Yes, Papa?"
"I want you to take charge of this thing personally," said Borodini. "A thing like this makes me look bad. I want that goddamn cyborg taken out. And the..."
There's that N-word again.
"Two, I don't care what it takes. Just get it done. I want their fucking heads boxed and delivered to the TV news."
"I'll take care of it, Papa."
"See that you do."
There was a warm, pleasant summer day, and they were playing in the park. Steele's wife was spreading out their picnic lunch on the blanket, while their three children, their little girl, and the twin boys, played with the dog. Steele glanced over at his wife, and she smiled, brushing her long black hair away from her face. It was a bucolic, peaceful scene, but there was something wrong with it. They never had a dog. Janice was a blonde, and they had two kids, not three, Corey and Jason. They were blonde like their mother. These kids all had dark brown hair, and none of them looked like him. He struggled to recall their names as they called out to him, shouting, "Daddy! Daddy! Look! Daddy!"
"Who were they?"
He turned to their mother. She smiled and blew him a kiss. A name came to him suddenly.
"Donna."
Her name was Donna. She was his wife. But his wife's name was Janice. "Daddy! Daddy!" He had no idea who they were. Suddenly, a horrible scream broke the stillness of the park. In an instant, it was night. "My children! My children!" Donna screamed. His mother had suddenly appeared out of nowhere, her clothing torn and filthy, her face covered in the hideous, running sores of a screamer, just as in his childhood when she had come bursting through the door of their apartment, mindless with the awful virus raging in her system, she descended on the children as she attacked his two younger brothers, clasping them to her chest and biting at them like a rabid dog. He stood rooted to the spot, unable to move, as he heard their agonizing screaming. "Daddy!" He came awake with a cry. Raven was sitting on the edge of his bed, naked, her hands on his shoulders.
"It's okay, it's okay,"
she said.
"It was just a dream."
He stared at her wildly, breathing hard.
"You had a nightmare,"
she said.
"I heard you next door. It must have been a bad one, huh?"
Steele shut his eyes briefly and took a ragged breath. "Yeah, it was a bad one."
"Well, it's okay now,"
she said, putting her arms around him and pulling him close.
"It's okay. It's okay."
She slipped beneath the covers and lay down next to him, holding him in her arms.
"I'll stay right here,"
she said softly, stroking his hair lightly.
"It'll be all right. Just go to sleep now. No more bad dreams."
He lay with his head pillowed on her breasts while she gently stroked his hair. After a while, he fell asleep, and there were no more dreams. He awoke to the smell of fresh coffee. He got dressed and went out into the kitchen. Raven stood by the stove, barefoot, in his bathrobe, cooking up some eggs and bacon. He glanced at the clock. It was 10. "I overslept," he said.
"You had a bad night,"
she said.
"You didn't have hardly anything in your refrigerator, so I went down and asked one of the guards to go pick up a few things. I told him that you'd pay him back. He said not to worry about it."
"You went down to the lobby like that," said Steele. She shrugged.
"I don't know the number to call down. Oh, and you had a phone call. I picked it up quick so it wouldn't wake you. Somebody named Higgins. Wanted to know who the hell I was. Then he wanted me to wake you. I told him to go fuck himself. You'd call him back when you got up."
Steele grinned. "How did you take that?"
"Who knows? I hung up. I hope that you like your eggs scrambled. That's the only way I know how to make them."
He thought about telling her that he didn't usually eat breakfast, but instead he said, "Scrambled will be fine."
"I made some fresh coffee. I don't know how you take it, but there's some milk in the fridge."
"I take it black. Thanks." He poured himself a cup. "You're very domestic this morning," he said. She shrugged.
"Hey, hooker's gotta eat too, you know."
"That was nice. What you did last night?" She shrugged again.
"I get bad dreams too, all the time. It's a drag when you're alone."
She paused.
"I put all the stuff back, just like you said."
"Good."
"I guess it was a pretty shitty thing to do. Trying to rip you off, I mean."
"So why'd you do it?"
"I don't know. I guess you either rip people off or you get ripped off. Know what I mean?"
"I suppose that's one attitude to take, but there are others."
"Would you have really broken my arms?"
"Probably, if you tried it again."
"Yeah, that's what I figured. You don't seem like the type who'd just make threats."
She dumped the eggs and bacon on two plates and brought them over to the table.
"Toast will be done in a minute."
She lit up a cigarette.
"I would have shot you, you know, when you walked in on me."
"I don't doubt it," Steele said, taking a mouthful of eggs.
"I would have shot you, you know, when you walked in on me."
"I've been shot before." She gave a brief, snorting laugh and shook her head.
"I can't figure you out."
"Why bother trying?" She shook her head.
"I don't know. There's just something different about you."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah. I can't put my finger on it. It's like last night when you took the gun away from me, and then I pulled the knife, and you took that away too, and you didn't do anything. I mean, yeah, you told me that if I got out of line again, you'd break my arms, but then you gave me the gun and the knife back to me and told me to put all the stuff back and, like, you just turned your back and walk away. I could have shot you or tried to stab you, but it's like you knew I wouldn't. I mean, you just knew. Now, if it was Rico, he was my pimp, he would have trashed me just to show me who was boss, to prove how strong he was. But you didn't even have to do that. You didn't even have to lay a finger on me. And I knew not to mess with you. I mean, Rico would never turn his back on me. And then later on, when you had that dream, and I got into bed with you, and you were holding me, you were so scared. And you weren't afraid to let me see that.
Everyone gets scared at one time or another, said Steele.
Yeah, but most people are afraid to show it. Because if you show someone you're afraid, it's like showing them a weakness.
Fear isn't a weakness, Steele said. Being afraid to admit you feel it is a weakness.
It takes being strong to say that.
No, said Steele. It just takes being honest.
She gazed at him for a moment, then looked away.
Your egg's okay? I ain't much of a cook.
They're fine. I just don't usually eat breakfast.
Yeah, me neither. A cup of coffee and a cigarette's about as much as I can handle in the morning. But this morning, I was hungry. So who's this Higgins guy?
He's the man who pays the rent on this place, Steele said.
Oh,
she said.
He's the guy you work for, huh? I guess I shouldn't have hung up on him.
Don't worry about it. I've done it myself. I've got a feeling I know what he wanted anyway. It was probably about our blowing up Borodini's warehouse full of stolen ordnance last night. I have a feeling he would have been lots happier if I'd just called it a strike and recaptured all the hardware.
So why didn't you?
Because I didn't care about the ordnance. I wanted to rub Borodini's nose in it. I wanted him to know that it was me and Ice who did it and cost him all that money. Word will get around and it'll make him look bad.
Won't that get you in trouble with your boss?
Higgins told me to recover the ordnance if I could and destroy it if I couldn't. Well, for all I know, by the time I called in for backup and they got there, Borodini could have had his people move the stuff. So I destroyed it, just like the man said.
She grinned.
You do things pretty much your own way, don't you?
That way, I can be sure that they get done, said Steele.
The doorbell rang and Steele went to answer it. It was Ice. He wore dark slacks and a black t-shirt with his gold chain around his neck. His huge muscles bulged against the shirt so that it looked like it was painted on. And, as usual, he wore his shades.
You catch the news this morning?
He said.
No, I slept late.
Ice glanced at Raven in Steele's bathrobe. He grinned.
Uh-huh.
It's not what you think, said Steele.
Hey, ain't none of my business,
Ice replied.
But they had a nice shot of that bonfire we had last night. Got a chopper out there not long after we left. You should have seen it. Whole damn block went up. Dunn mentioned our names, too.
Steele frowned.
How'd they find out so fast?
I done called them,
Ice said.
Right after we got in last night. Told them what it was in the warehouse, who belonged to, and what we did do it. And then I called the man himself.
You called Borodini?
Left the man a message. Gave him our warmest regards. Ha!
You two are crazy,
Raven said, shaking her head.
You don't know who you're dealing with.
Get that wrong, sister. Man don't know who he's dealing with,
said Ice.
So what's on the agenda for today, policeman?
I gotta go see Higgins, Steele said. Meanwhile, why don't you take Raven out and buy her some clothes?
You want me to go shopping?
Ice said.
With her looking like that, what's she gonna wear?
Let her borrow some of my clothes, Steele said.
He glanced at Raven and smiled.
They'll be a little bigger on her, but I think she could manage to fit into them. Get her anything she wants.
Who picking up the tab?
Charge it to Higgins, Steele said. Just flash that little government ID he gave you and have them send the bill to the federal building.
Yeah, might pick me up a thing or two while I be at it.
Be my guest. I'll meet you back here later.
He turned to Raven.
You can go borrow some of my fatigues. Just give them back to Ice when you're done with them. Chances are, I won't be seeing you again, so take care of yourself and try to stay out of trouble.
You sending me away?
She said. Steele glanced at her with surprise.
You didn't expect to stay here, surely.
Why not?
She said.
There's plenty of room. I wouldn't be a bother. I'd behave myself. I promise.
Lady seems to like it here,
said Ice with a smile.
Look, said Steele, nothing personal, but...
Don't send me away!
She said.
Please, look, I could help you guys. I know a lot about the Borodini family.
Steele gave her a wry look.
Now how would you know anything about the Borodinis that would be of any use to us?
I used to be Tommy Borodini's girl.
She said.
You lying.
I said.
I ain't lying.
She said, bristling.
It's the truth.
Will you expect me to believe that?
Steele said.
I can prove it.
She said. She bent down and removed the small gold bracelet from around her ankle. She tossed it on the table in front of Steele. He picked it up and looked at it. It was a delicate ankle ID in 24-karat gold. The little oval nameplate was engraved in fancy script.
Tommy B, read Steele.
Could be on the level,
I said.
Borodini's son go by the handle, Tommy B.
You could have got this anywhere, said Steele, dubiously, though he was looking at her with new interest.
Yeah, but I didn't,
she said.
Tommy gave it to me, and there's been pictures took of us together for the papers. If you don't believe me, you could check on that, couldn't you?
Steele pursed his lips thoughtfully. Yes, it would be easy enough to check. How long ago would this have been?
5, 6 years ago. Around 6, I think.
Steele frowned. You would have been about 16?
Yeah, that's about right. I started seeing Tommy when I was 15.
15? Said Steele. Tommy Borodini would have been 28, 29.
Yeah, that's right,
she said.
Tommy always did like him on the young side,
I said wryly. How'd you wind up on the streets? Asked Steele.
I caught Tommy fucking off on me with one of my girlfriends when I was 17,
she said.
Walked in on him together. He laughed and wanted me to join the party. I grabbed a knife and cut him.
Where?
Asked Dice.
On his face,
she said.
Right here.
She traced a line on her cheek. Ice nodded.
Tommy B's got himself a scar on his right cheek,
he told Steele.
Bastard trashed me,
Raven said.
Beat on me till I couldn't even crawl. Then he gave me to some of his boys, and after they were through having their fun, he had him throw me in a car and take me to Rico. He turned me out, and I've been with him ever since.
Why didn't you run away? Asked Steele.
Don't think I didn't try,
she said bitterly.
I ain't so easy. Besides, where was I gonna go? I ain't got no family.
She picked up the ankle bracelet.
I kept this to remind me of what that bastard did. I swore I'd get even with him someday. This could be my chance, Steele. Don't send me away. Please, I got nowhere to go.
Steele glanced to Ice, then looked back at her. Okay, we'll talk about this later, he said. Meanwhile, we'd better get you some clothes to wear. I need to check the newspaper morgues. About 5 or 6 years ago, Steele said to Gates. Can we get access? Shouldn't be a problem, Gates said. I can access their microfiche files from here once I get them online and have them loaded the right ones. Which paper? Let's try the Daily News. Okay, what date? I'm not sure. I need to start looking from about 6 years back. What are you looking for? Asked Gates as he started typing in commands. A photograph, but I don't know which paper it appeared in or exactly when. I'll have to interface and scan. Okay, I'll just set you up for a download via a broadcast link. Make yourself comfortable. It'll only take a couple of minutes. Steele took a seat, and a few moments later, Gates had access to the data. Okay, so it'll only take a second or two to interface you. Hold on. Steele waited. Okay, you're all set. Steele leaned back and closed his eyes. An image appeared in his mind, as clearly as if he were looking at it. It was the front page of a newspaper dated 6 years ago. He locked Raven's image in his mind so that his cybernetic brain would flag it if it came up, then proceeded to scan the files. The images started to come faster and faster, much faster than the ordinary human eye could follow, but he wasn't looking at them with his eyes. His computer brain was sorting through them, seeking the right one. The data kept coming in a blur, months worth of papers scanned in a matter of seconds, faster and faster, and then, bingo, there it was. 5th day of August, 5 years earlier, middle of the fourth page. Tommy Borodini leaving a chic midtown night spot with a young brunette on his arm. It was undeniably Raven. She had told the truth.
You find what you're looking for? Said Gates.
Yeah, you can disconnect.
The image flicked out, and Steele opened his eyes.
I need some information, but I haven't got the time to hunt it down now. Could you put together a file for me to take on download?
Sir, what do you need?
Everything I can get on the Borodini family and their enclave in Cold Spring Harbor. Government and police files. Newspaper accounts. The works. Whatever you can get.
That could take a while.
How long?
Gates shrugged. A few hours, maybe more. I could have it for you by this afternoon.
Okay. Let me know when you've got it all assembled.
No problem.
Thanks. I'll check back with you later.
He left the lab and took the elevator upstairs to Higgins' office. The secretary glanced up as he came in.
Hello, Nancy. Boss in?
She nodded.
He's been waiting to see you. He's not in a good mood.
Steele grimaced.
When is he ever?
You've got a point there,
she said with a smile.
Go right in.
Higgins was on the phone when he came in. He glanced up and said, I'll call you back, and hung up.
You wanted to see me?
Steele said. Yeah, about several hours ago, said Higgins dryly. What was that with that stunt last night?
You told me you wanted to disrupt Bordini's operations in the city, Steele said. Well, I disrupted them.
Why the hell didn't you call in for backup? We could have had it at that warehouse and recovered all the ordnance. You didn't have to blow it up, for God's sake.
You told me you wanted the stolen ordnance either recovered or destroyed, so I destroyed it.
You have any idea how much all that stuff is worth?
Along with all the dope in there, it was probably worth a bundle, Steele said. But by the time I called in an assault unit and they got there, they could have moved a lot of it. The moment the Strike Force unit crossed over into No Man's Land, Borodini's people would have been alerted. They would have brought in reinforcements from the gangs, and there would have been a firefight. I didn't want to take that chance. Besides, this way we got some dramatic coverage, and now everybody knows that Borodini got hit by the same two people he put contracts out on. I fear it's a little more embarrassing for him this way.
It would have been a lot less embarrassing for me if we could have recovered all that ordnance, said Higgins sourly. Who's that girl? Security told me you and Ice brought her in last night wearing nothing but a sport coat. What you do on your own time is your business, but I don't need some little twit telling me where to get off and then hanging up on me. What's going on?
Her name is Raven, Steele said. She's a hooker.
Higgins grimaced. Didn't think you went in for that sort of thing.
I don't, said Steele. She was at the warehouse. The Skulls were brutalizing her. Ice and I pulled her out of there. She refused to go to the hospital, and I couldn't very well just let her loose on the streets like that. Besides, she's got some information that could prove very useful.
What sort of information?
She used to be Tommy Bordini's girl, said Steele. She got him cheating on her, and they had a fight. She cut his face, and after he worked her over, then he gave her to his boys, after which he had her turned over to a pimp in No Man's Land named Rico. He turned her out, and she's been in a stable ever since, but she caused him trouble, so he gave her over to the Skulls to teach her a lesson. For obvious reasons, she'd like to get back at Tony B, so she offered to help. She was with him for several years. She knows the Enclave, and knows a lot about what goes on in there.
That could be useful, Higgins said. I'll run a make on her. What's her last name?
I don't know. She didn't tell me. I don't even know if Raven is her real name. But she was photographed with Tommy B, and she's got a gold ankle bracelet that he gave her with his name on it.
Where is she now? Still at your place?
She's with Ice, said Steele. I sent him out to pick up some clothes for her. I couldn't have her running around wearing nothing but my bathrobe.
I take it I'm going to get the bill, said Higgins Riley.
I figure the company can afford it,
Steele said. You've been doing an awful lot of figuring without checking with me, said Higgins.
You want me to check with you every time something comes up?
Higgins sighed. All right, he said, but it would be nice if you could keep me posted. If you've got time to call the TV news, you've got time to call me.
That was Ice, said Steele. I was busy.
I'll bet, said Higgins. That TV reporter's been calling me all day, wanting some sort of statement about what happened last night. The one who did that story on you, Linda Tellerman. She'd like an interview.
I already told you how I feel about that.
I don't want to antagonize the media, Steele. They can be a help to us. Good PR can help us with our funding.
Fine, so you talk to her.
She wants you, said Higgins, trying to keep his patience. I understand how you feel. But it wouldn't hurt you to play ball a little. And if you want to get Victor Borodini's goat, a TV interview would be the perfect vehicle.
Okay, I'll think about it.
You do that. Dr. Cooper wants to see you before you leave. Stop by his office on your way out. Dev Cooper looked tired. There were bags under his eyes, and he had neglected to shave that morning. He was looking over some files when Steele came into his office.
You wanted to see me?
Steele. Sit down. How are you doing?
I'm okay. You look worn out, though.
Didn't get much sleep last night, said Dev with a faint smile. Lots of catching up to do. Been looking over Dr. Carmody's files on you.
Anything wrong?
No, not really. I just wanted to check in with you and see how things were going.
Okay, I guess, said Steele. There's no bugs in the program so far as I can tell.
He thought about the dream he'd had last night. He didn't want to tell Cooper about it. It was the same dream he'd had before, only this time there'd been a new wrinkle. The first time, they'd just been playing in the park. That strange woman who was his wife, and yet not his wife, and those three children who were his and yet not his. Last night, he'd gotten a name for the woman. Donna. Donna what? He didn't know, and his mother had been in it too. His real mother, who had contracted virus 3 and become a screamer. He would never forget the way she'd looked when she came bursting through the door of the apartment screaming, "My children! My children!" She had torn her clothes and her face was already ravaged by the awful running sores. Her face was devoid of any sanity. It was the face of a monster. He had stood rooted to the spot in terror as she had hurled herself upon his two younger brothers, hugging them to her breast and covering them with bloody kisses. And then suddenly she started biting them. His father had not been able to get her in time to stop her. They had struggled and he shot her. But during their struggle, he had become infected. To save Steele's brothers from a fate worse than death, he had shot them both and then turned the gun on himself. The memory of that terrible night had been seared into Steele's consciousness forever. He didn't know how to account for that dream he had last night. After losing his family that way, he'd had nightmares about that night for years until they finally went away. But last night, the visions came back to haunt him once again. Only it was as if part of the memory was his and part was someone else's. He had no idea who those children were, but they'd called him Daddy. And he felt, inexplicably, that they were his. And Donna, who was she? His wife, according to this dream. Yet he had never seen her before. And at the same time, he felt as if she was his wife. And that was crazy. His wife's name was Janice. And she had divorced him, taking Corey and Jason with her. So who was this stranger who was somehow not a stranger? Def Cooper was watching him with a slight frown on his face, but still did not want to tell him about the dream. Perhaps he should, but what if it wasn't some sort of peculiar quirk of his normal subconscious mental engrams? What if it was some sort of glitch in the program? They'd put him on downtime once again, and while he was out, Gates and his people would debug him, go through his program with a fine-tooth comb in their search for any glitches. And if they found one, they would take it out. Erase it. Only what else would they erase? From his long conversations with Susan Carmody, Steele knew how delicate his mental engrams were. The subconscious, translated into a computer program, was like an incredibly intricate web. Touch one strand, and all the others quiver. Break one. "What is it?" Dev asked. "Nothing," Steele lied. "Just thinking about something I've got to do. I've got some people waiting for me. In fact, I really should be going." "We haven't had much time to talk," said Dev. "We'll do it some other time," said Steele. "Soon, I promise." He got up to leave. "Steele?" He paused uneasily. "Is there something you ain't telling me?" He forced a smile. "No, I've just got a lot on my mind right now, that's all. Don't worry, Dev. I'm fine. Really."
"You sure? If there's something bothering you, we really ought to talk about it."
"It's just police business, that's all," said Steele. "I have to go talk to an informer. Might give me a line on Victor Borodini. As soon as I get all that wrapped up, we'll talk. I really have got to go."
"Take care of yourself," said Dev, watching him with a concerned expression on his face.
"Will do. Be seeing you."
Dev sat still for a long moment after he left. Then he picked up the phone.
"This is Dr. Cooper," he said. "Let me talk to Dr. Gates."
End of chapter.